Hello again. I hope you're all nice and comfy. In fact, I should use the immortal words. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I shall begin. We're still on the letter B. And the next entry for the It Is Just You, Everything's Not Shit, is Bacon Scott Model Village. Or Bacon Scott Model Village. I don't know why I keep thinking of bacon. Anyway. At the very end of the walk around Bacon Scott Model Village, there is a sign. It isn't particularly big, but its size is in inverse proportion to the joy it brings to those who read it. It says, quite simply, please feel free to walk around again. Roland Callingham was a successful London accountant in the 1920s, and with the money he made from his businesses, he bought several acres of meadow adjoining his home in Beaconsfield in Buckinghamshire. Together with his head gardener, Tom Berry, he built a number of model houses as a feature for his Alpine garden. The scale he used for these houses, 1 inch to 1 foot, is now the accepted 1 in 12 scale for all dolls' houses worldwide. In the early days, the model village was only intended to entertain his friends and clients, but as it grew in size, he was encouraged to open it to the public. He did so in 1929. A Bacon Scott Model Village was born. The first such attraction in the world. During his lifetime, Callingham added an extensive railway network, system, a lake and a number of surrounding villages, including Greenhaley, with its own zoo, and the fishing village of South Pool. Nearly 80 years later, Bacon Scott is still going strong, with all the proceeds given to charity. A decision was taken in 1993 to maintain the village in its 1930s likeness, thus preserving a portrait of a way of life, and that has long since vanished in the real world. Fascinating fact. Bacon Scott Model Village includes a scale model of the home of children's author Enid Blyton, who lived nearby. Eagle-eyed visitors will spot a bright red and yellow car in the driveway with a certain nodding wooden toy at the steering wheel. Being a kid for 5 minutes. Sometimes the opportunity presents itself to shrug off your adult years and muck in with the kids. Setting up a Scalextric set, finger painting, rearranging the furniture in a doll's house, rolling out plasticine, making mud pies. The list will differ depending on your age and what you get up to when you were a child, or what you got up to when you were a child. But The unadulterated joy of those stolen moments is the same for everyone. Ah, another bee. Berry picking. Few foods taste nicer than a blackberry picked from the bramble and popped straight into the mouth, or a strawberry plucked by hand. Modern retailing means that you can buy most types of berry frozen or fresh-ish all year round, but not even the owners of Tesco would claim that a raspberry flown over from South Africa tastes as good as one you have picked yourself. Pick your own farms are commonplace and scattered across the UK. At the height of the summer, they are full of seasoned pickers and children toddling around with juice-stained faces. Obviously, the aforementioned raspberries and strawberries are popular, as gooseberries are for cooking. But there are many more berries out there to try. Bilberry, for example, a pain in the backside to harvest, but they are very tasty and well worth the bother if you have the patience. They are the key ingredient of mucky mouth pies, which is a popular Yorkshire dish. Cloudberry, largely native in the form of jam to IKEA stores nowadays. You can still find this small shrub alongside moors in the north of England and across Scotland, although they are quite scarce. If you are lucky enough to come across some of these deep orange berries, they taste great warmed over ice cream or used in puddings and jams. Cowberry, a close relative of the cranberry. These really need to be cooked before eating. A crowberry. You are unlikely to find many of these around. They are far more common in Scandinavia, but they make a nice jelly. Dewberry. A little like a small blackberry, but with less of a cluster of fruit. These are very difficult to pick without bursting, so it's best to snip the stems and then eat the fruit dipped in sugar. Juneberry, quite rare and usually confined to the south of England. These are sweet purple berries and can be eaten straight from the bush. Rowanberry, found on the rowan tree, or the mountain ash as it's known. These resemble elderberries but are large and bright orange. They are usually cooked and preserved as jam or served as a sauce with meat and game. White bean. You can often find these on suburban roadsides, and they are also a popular garden shrub. The small bunches of red berries are not overly nice, but at least you can say you tried them. Oh, another bee. Birthday cards with cash in them. When you are a child, cards are the most boring part of birthdays. What you want are the presents, and lots of them. So when you open up the pastel-coloured envelope to reveal a card with a puppy on it, you have to pretend to be grateful. But then a nice, crisp tenner falls out, and suddenly the moment is saved. We've all been there. Don't pretend. pretend you haven't. Black and white movies. Sunday afternoon, no one in the house. Black and white film on the telly. Bar of chocolate on the arm of the sofa. Perfection. Bookshop browsing. Some of the greatest pleasures in life are the most simple. Standing in a bookshop, surrounded by thousands of volumes, is one such joy. Ideally, you will be in no rush. It is good to linger when browsing books. You can then identify a suitable section and decide upon your strategy. There are many to choose from. The librarian. Strict alphabetical order. You start at A and allow your eye to run across each spine, perhaps aided by a pointing finger. A small may venture from your lips when you find something not in the correct order. Selected books will be removed from the shelf, examined, and then placed back carefully. After 20 minutes, you have only reached as far as C, so make a mental note of where you got to for your next visit. The ADHD. Even though you have all the time in the world, you don't want to miss anything, so your eyes scan huge sections in one go, lingering briefly on interesting looking jackets or strange titles. You will pick things up but get bored after the first few lines of blurb. The favouritist. You make a beeline for your favourite authors and quickly check that they haven't published a new book without you knowing. They never have. You then proceed to rearrange their titles on the shelf so that other shoppers are more likely to come across them. The janitor. A nice leisurely browse, tidying as you go. Booksellers of the world love people like you. The gambler. Pure pot luck. You pick up anything that comes to hand using whatever method works for you that day. You end up taking home a bunch of stuff you've never heard of just to see what it's like. The pigeonholer. You know what you like. And you like what you know. You head straight for your department of choice, never deviating or being swayed by multi-buys or special offers. You are rarely surprised. The Abramovich. It's payday and you buy everything that looks remotely attractive or interesting and end up with a pile of books that you will struggle to fit on your shelves. Oh, I like this one. The next B is breakfast in bed. This is the one that no one minds being woken up early for and is the rare occasion when a continental breakfast isn't a disappointment. Oh, the next B is a good one. Breaking the the ice on a puddle. Oh, yes. Once you reach about the age of 10, you stop being magnetically attracted to rain puddles. No longer do you jump straight in them, wellies or not. No more do you risk the anger of your mum for getting your socks all wet and muddy. You are grown up, or growing up, and jumping in puddles is something you can choose, albeit reluctantly, to leave behind. The frozen puddle, however, is a different thing entirely. It's almost impossible for an adult to walk past one without testing it with their foot in an illicit hope that the beautiful and satisfying crack and the spider web of fractures as you break the surface. It is the sort of moment that fuels an otherwise grey day. Bubble wrap. Happy birthday, bubble wrap. Bubble wrap was invented by Mark Chavanes and Alfred Fielding in 1957, making it, well, actually, this book's printed in 2007, 61 years old. Technically, the term bubble wrap is trademarked by the Sealed Air Corporation. Can you believe there's actually a Sealed Air Corporation? Anyway, and to avoid any legal wrangling, I should refer to it as air cellular cushioning material. But then you wouldn't have a clue what I was on about. Originally, the inventors were trying to come up with a new type of wallpaper. But ended up with a versatile packing material. Little did they know at the time, but they had actually created one of the most pleasurable and hypnotic stress-relieving devices known to man, which is, of course, the real reason for its inclusion in this volume. The Sealed Air Corporation, that would make a good name for a band, anyway, seemed to have sense of humour about this aspect of their product and even have a personality test on their website which determines the sort of person you are by examining the way in which you pop the bubbles. For example, an extroverted and self-motivated person tends to throw the bubble wrap on the floor and stomp about over it. I prefer to pop them one at a time, which makes me pragmatic and self-assured, apparently. Fascinating fact. Bubble Wrap Appreciation Day is celebrated on the 29th of January every year, with events to mark the occasion including popping relay races and bubble wrap sculpture. Oh dear. Well, I hope you like tonight's installment. I hope you're relaxed and didn't mind my giggles. Good night.